live from the List Track Recording Studio. This is Email Marketing Today. Here are your hosts, Ross, Matt, and Brent.
All right, and welcome to Email Marketing Today. I am Brent Schroyer, the product manager with List Track. Also in the studio here with me today is Ross Kramer and Matt Elliott. How are you guys doing?
Doing well, Brent. Thank you.
We're great. Great to be here kicking off this podcast series today, Brent.
Yeah, that's right. We actually had a podcast series we had done probably 2 or 3 years ago now, and we're relaunching our podcast so that we can talk about some best practices and talk about strategies, email marketing strategies that you can use in your email marketing for your company.
Yeah, that's right. You know, we spend a lot of time on customer education and thought leadership in the email marketing space, and looking at other ways to try to get the word out, so to speak, for a lot of the best practices and a lot of things that we're trying to impart to our customers. So hopefully this podcast is going to be a great tool for like-minded email marketers to come on board, listen and share some of their success stories.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, one of the things we wanted to dive right into here today Megan Ouellette, our marketing manager, had put together a white paper here a little while back called the 221 Email Marketing Do's and Don'ts Best Practice Reference Guide. And this can be downloaded out on our website at www.listtrack.com under the resources area. But what we thought we'd talk about today is the list acquisition and talk about some best practices with list acquisition. So why don't we just start at the top of the list? The first item here, ask for permission before adding subscribers to your list. I mean, that's kind of a given here when it comes to acquiring new addresses to your list.
That's correct. That is that's kind of a no-brainer to do there. And permission is the root of deliverability nowadays. And it's a very important aspect of your email acquisition strategy is making sure that your customers are in one way or another indicating that they've signed up for your newsletter or accepted an invitation to join your newsletter. But in any case, you need to make sure that the people that you're delivering to have asked to receive the email. And this is, I mean, there's some legal ramifications behind that, as well as just some just best practices to make sure that you're reaching an audience that's engaged and ready to read your information and possibly act on your call to actions that you're including in your email.
I think what's cool for me to see and watching the industry grow up and change over the past 10 years or so is that I think most people finally get the get the permission thing. You know, they sort of get that. They realize they need a permission, despite the fact, when you guys were out at the DMA show about you had a 90% chance of getting someone coming up to you and say, "Do you sell lists?" there's still a large contingent in our Direct Marketing Association brethren that think that it's still cool to sell email lists, which, for the record, we don't recommend that.
That's correct. And a big part of that is there's just a big difference between direct mail and email when it comes to perception and the personal aspect of email versus receiving an envelope in the mail. You can just tear it up and throw it out, no big whoop. But as far as receiving an email in your inbox, it's a more personal connection, and a lot of people feel that it's an invasion of privacy to receive something that they didn't ask for. Their inbox is something real personal to them, so there's a big difference in how you kind of handle who you're going to send to and how you're going to send to them.
And it could be really damaging from a reputation standpoint as far as the people on your list that you actually do have permission. If for some reason you actually do bring in some people on your list that you have not granted you the permission to be on your list, your abuse complaints start to rack up. You're going to affect deliverability across the board with the rest of your reputation.
That's true, Brent. And one of the driving factors for deliverability is reputation, as you mentioned. And one of the key factors that goes into reputation are abuse complaints. And one way to make sure that you're not receiving as many abuse complaints is to make sure you're sending to people that have asked to receive your emails. And that's where the permission comes into play.
Well, the next item here, build your own lists and collect data at every customer touch point, both online and offline. And I'd have to kind of go back to the first topic here and, be careful. When you're gathering that information, especially if you're gathering it through offline channels at a trade show or through a contest entry or anything like that, you want to make sure that you are putting out there exactly the expectation of what they're signing up for, and that they are actually giving you permission, that you are allowed to send them the message that you want to send to that receiver.
That's true, Brent. And I know I've gone into a lot of stores lately, retail stores, and you're seeing it more and more often that you go to checkout and they'll ask you for your email address so that they can add you to their newsletter list. One thing I do is ask them, what are you going to use that email address for? I don't mind giving it to you, but can you tell me what's the advantage I'm going to get from it? And it's amazing how there's so many different varying degrees of training going out to the point of sales people that are asking for that and the collection of it. Not only that, but offline collection is also a very slippery slope because you're dependent on somebody writing their email address correctly and somebody transposing that and typing it into the database system that it's going to go into correctly. And offline addresses have a really high rate of inaccuracy, and that's something to be taken into account. But it's not to say it's not a worthy avenue for collecting addresses. Just, you know, it really helps to have a solid training program and making sure that all your offline sources, you know, your point of sales people, your call centers, people have been properly trained and take the due diligence to make sure that they're and understand why they need to take due diligence to make sure those email addresses are as accurate as possible.
And I'll speak to Matt's offline collection topic and say that make sure that there's a clear value proposition of what that email exchange is going to get the consumer. And that's a thought process that goes into when fleshing out your strategy and what you're thinking about when you're coming up with your email marketing strategy is what types of things are we going to send to the people that sign up on our list and is it going to be valuable? And I think what many of the folks that we talk to, customers and other folks that even aren't our customers, is that the email programs that provide the most value to the consumers are the ones that really drive the highest ROI for the individual businesses and organizations. So being able to properly broker that value to the consumer at the point of sale or at the kiosk or check-in or whether it's just a you know, old school 4x5 or 4x6 card that they're filling out and dropping into a box, make sure that there's a clear value proposition stated.
And that goes back to the training aspect as well, because I know my experiences have varied as to how well they could answer that question. You know, when a point of salesperson asked me for that, for my email address, as to whether or not they know what they're going to do with it. And that really can damage my level of confidence in what they're going to do with it or how much email. If they can't tell me how often they're going to email me or what they're going to email me, I'm not going to sign up for that list. And that kind of information, like Ross said, that value proposition needs to be pushed down to every level so that, you know, they're people that are out there on the front lines are able to speak of it intelligently.
Let's look at the next item here. Keep the opt-in process quick and simple. Only collect the profiling attributes that are most important to your business. Now, that one I would kind of say it depends. For many instances, getting the opt-in process as just simply an email address with some basic information may be the way to go, but also collecting the right kind of segmentation data is extremely important. So I think it's kind of a balancing act. That has to happen there, and it all kind of depends on your target audience as to how much segmentation you can present in that initial sign-up form.
Sure, and we've seen a lot of different strategies for that. We've seen like a 2 or 3-tiered system where the first step is to give your email address, they'll collect that, and then the next landing page will tell us more about yourself.
It's the preference center at that
point. The preference center, yeah, exactly. And some of that information is optional, some of it you might try to require, and asking people for personal information is, you know, getting tougher and tougher with a lot of the issues out there with phishing and identity theft and everything else. And people are getting a little more skittish about giving up personal information. So, you know, a lot of companies are going to incentives. You know, yeah. Do incentives. What's an appropriate incentive for your particular value proposition that you're going to offer somebody to try to get them to give you their information? Is it a sweepstakes? Is it an iPod giveaway? You know, what's the right thing for your business line that's going to attract the right type of person to sign up for your list and give you the information that you need?
And I think if you can show the value in that segmentation, you can show that, you know, they are actually signing up for the information that they want to receive and only that information, and they don't care about some of the other things on, you know, on that preference center, that, you know, you're showing value there with the information that you're gathering.
Absolutely. And another thing to remember is, those kinds of that kind of information really varies also depending on if you're in a B2C environment, you know, a business-to-consumer environment, or a business-to-business, business-to-business environment, as to what type of information is important to you. And I think a lot of times on the business-to-consumer side, a lot of that information can be tracked through behavior, through the website and through some other means, and maybe not always asking for them. You know, you have, in a lot of cases, buying preferences and buying habits that you can look at and not always have to ask them for that information. And on the business-to-business side, you know, sometimes you don't always have access to that information, or you're not directly dealing with the end user or the buyer of the product, but more of a distributor or somebody else, you know, in the channel that you need to disseminate information to. And so the collection process is a little bit different on that side.
You know, the one thing that we learned at our annual users conference this year, Email Marketing Days in September, was a presentation that the folks from the ad agency Lawrence and Schiller did, and they'll be joining us on a webinar
in January.
So for those of you that this particular item interests you, you'll definitely want to stay tuned to our webinar series and the one coming up in January. But so Lawrence and Schiller runs the tourism email program for the state of North Dakota. And the thing that they found was that people that come to North Dakota for tourism reasons tend to, you know, they're sort of all over the board. You've got the folks that are, you know, that are sort of the luxury travelers. You're the folks that are value travelers. And then you've got the folks that say, you know, love to go camping. Well, those are different messages. When it gets down to their messaging strategy, that's really different messages. And one of the parallels that they drew was, when you're asking somebody to opt into your email address, it's like meeting them at a social event. You know, the first thing that you do, you know, say, what's your name? What's your email address? You sort of ask them sort of the simple stuff. And one of their key drivers to what message and the types of messaging that they sent to the people that signed up on the list for the North Dakota tourism was based on income level. But you would never ask somebody, as soon as you met them, how much do you make, right? That's a major sort of social faux pas. So they didn't want to ask that question. They found when they did ask that question, signups dropped off dramatically. So what they did was, and whereas we don't recommend buying lists and buying email lists, what you can do is you can buy data about the customers that sign up on your list and overlay that data and then use that data to send more relevant information. And that's what the folks at Lawrence and Schiller were doing, which is a really cool application of, you know, taking data that you don't have, matching it with data that you do have, and then sending very relevant messaging based upon that information that you've learned about those customers.
Definitely. Well, let's move on to the next item here. Let your subscribers know that you won't sell their information to a third party. Post your privacy policy online. And I would say that's extremely important. I would also say for the developers that are putting that in place to put that link into a new window. I've seen this happen before, where you have the privacy policy link at the bottom of a segmentation sign up form, and you fill out all your information. You go to view the privacy policy. Now you're off to a new page, and your information is cleared out. So just I would suggest, you know, if we do that, you would open that into a new window.
Definitely.
Brent, I'll also pop in here, because I know when we do sort of Q&A on the webinars, we use the GoToMeeting, GoToWebinar product, and people are always able to ask questions. But I've just realized that there might be some folks listening that have questions and have no way to ask them or get them answered. And I would just offer up our contact and email expert form.
Definitely, yeah.
At listtrack.com, listtrak.com. So, you know, I was just thinking, boy, somebody might have a question like, where can I buy said data, Ross? Hit the contact and email expert form at listtrack.com.
Absolutely.
Next item here, allow visitors to opt into your email list from every page of your website, not just your homepage. Just more opportunity for people that may have missed it on that initial homepage, you know, making that a more clear call to action throughout your site will just help to increase the acquisitions.
Definitely. And when you consider that most of your entry points into websites nowadays are coming off of searches, off of Google searches, and taking you directly into
That's right.
the page that has the item that you're looking for and bypassing the homepage, that's definitely an important strategy.
Yeah, and that's with the long tail. You know, when you have the long tail searches coming through, you know, not going directly to the homepage of your site. You're right. You know, a lot of those people end up landing on those secondary pages, or you know, really, you know, very deep into your site. So yeah, great idea to include that in every page.
And I'll just, you know, put in again regarding the value proposition. Make sure that that's clearly stated on your website what the value is. Don't be afraid to sort of sex up the copy a little bit to make that, you know, make your offer compelling of why they should give their email address. You know, you might even want to make it sound that it's, you know, you're going to get exclusive offers or exclusive information. You know, that always helps to, you know, help your acquisition rate. And test. You know, that's the other thing that you're going to hear a lot on this podcast is, you know, whereas we have the microphones, we don't always have the best answers, and the best answers are most times found when you do some testing. So we would recommend that you do a fair amount of testing in your email campaigns and also in the copy that you use when trying to compel people to give them your email address.
Sure, and I've also seen some of our customers and in some of the conferences I go to where people are setting up different landing pages for the acquisition and testing different offers on the acquisition side, different layouts, and you know, ordering the information in a different way. Some forms will have ask for more, some will ask for less, and using different landing pages also to test the success of your acquisition form. Just don't think that one acquisition form is the right answer. If you want to grow your list organically and you want to collect those email addresses, it would be really in your best interest to try out a couple of different styles of acquisition pages and see what will work best.
So the next item here is provide sample emails to your subscribers so they know what to expect and the benefits they'll receive. I think it's a great idea to actually show something, you know, show a previous, even, you know, the latest newsletter that you've sent, just so that they can see what to expect when they get that message into their inbox. They're expecting it, they know it's you, and they're not going to report it as spam because there's more of a recognition factor.
Sure, that's a kind of a topic that I was at a conference and the email marketing director from Hewlett-Packard was talking about some of the changes that they had made to their sign-up page. And one of the things that they had done was start to show some of their sample copy. You know, they had tiered their sign-up process. And as part of that also, they gave samples so that people would know what to see, and they saw some really great returns on their acquisition.
Did he tell you why they continue to address me as Allison, who is my sister?
He did not.
Okay.
All right. Our next line item here. Offer subscribers choices such as text-only or HTML versions of your message, or allow them to choose their own frequency. Again, you know, giving your subscribers more of a choice, letting them describe to you what it is that they want to receive. You know, they may not like getting all of those pretty images, and they like just a basic text version. Let them, give them that option. Let them tell you in your subscription process.
Yeah, this is a pretty important step here along the way, because if you're sending out a message and you're spending a lot of time designing a look and feel for, you know, a compelling message, and that message isn't being received in the format it's intended for, and it doesn't display the way it was, then you're obviously losing a great deal of impact with that recipient. And it's a pretty simple process with most email service providers to segment out the types of, you know, message formats and make sure that you're filtering to the people that want to receive the text and the people that want to receive the HTML. And you can go as far as saying, you know, you could use dynamic content as a means to also reach people that have indicated that they want mobile messaging, you know, messages that would fit on a mobile messenger like a BlackBerry.
Yeah, Matt, I was actually going to ask you about that. You do spend a fair amount of your time traveling around the country to different conferences, talking to different people, and what your thought is on sort of the portability of today's inbox, and maybe you could speak a little bit about what you're seeing in the mobile space right now.
Definitely. And what we're seeing in the mobile space and what a lot of the research is showing is that a lot of people are starting to receive email and read email on their BlackBerries, or on their mobile devices, but they're not necessarily using them for purchasing and doing other things. They're getting that initial information, but they're returning to their inbox to view the full size version of the email at a later point in time to complete the purchase, because in a 72 pixel screen, in most cases, you're not getting enough real estate to really show the product, to really make the a shopping cart, a checkout process really easy. With that said, we are seeing some retailers, some online retailers, simplifying their shopping cart process and making it a lot easier to do a one-click purchase of an item, especially for returning customers that may already have, you know, their credit card or their other data, their shipping and billing and credit card data already on, and coming up with methods to make it much more simpler to display a product with a one-click buy option for people who have already registered with that site. And so that's one thing to consider. But the thing that the takeaway that I've been getting is that you can design your messages for mobile, but when it comes down to it, people are returning to their inbox to really get the full view and the full flavor of the email.
I do think that over the next couple of years, that'll change quite a bit with the iPhone and with Google's Android operating system. The fact that they can render out your HTML email on your phone, just like you would see it in a web browser. You know, you are starting to see more people clicking through from the phone.
And again, that's another classic example for testing, putting in different landing pages and different links and clicks for people that might be clicking through on mobile devices, you know, finding out a way to test that to see where they're coming in from. So,
all right, well, that looks like it's about all the time that we have here today. Next time, we'll continue on this list of list acquisition best practices. Ross, Matt, any last words?
Not at this point. Just the biggest takeaway is permission is still the key. You still need to make sure people are asking to receive or signing up to receive your emails. And let your acquisition point also be an opportunity to inform your receiver, you know, the recipients and the subscribers as to what they're going to receive, and really sell that value proposition. And you can really maximize your opportunities in that list acquisition.
Yeah, and I'll build upon what Matt said with regards to permission. I would also go so far to say, and kind of build upon what he had also said, that deliverability is really, you know, derived through the permission model. And we know through the research that we read and that we subscribe to and that we see out, you know, that's written in the journals, is that deliverability is the number one concern for email marketers. And permission is the pathway to deliverability. So it's so important.
Absolutely.
Well, thanks, guys. And thank you all for joining us here on this first Email Marketing Today podcast. Hope you'll join us next time and subscribe to this podcast. And we'll talk to you then.